CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com. We're talking to fathers and sons. It's Father's Day, and we thought we'd mark the occasion by having some discussions with some of our own family members here at CliffCentral.com. And one of them is Brett Lindsay. We've spoken to him a number of times on my show, but he has spoken to me on his show too. It's called Futurology. And they talk about all the things that are happening today that indicate what tomorrow might look like.
For sure.
He's a man with his eyes firmly fixed on the future.
Yep.
But for a moment, we're going to go into the past, because I only discovered this about you. I mean, having known you for over three years now,
yeah.
I only discovered this when Dori brought it up here in the office one day. She said, oh, do you know Brett Lindsay's dad is Keith Lindsay? And a spark went off in my mind, and I went, Radio Keith Lindsay? Pop stars Keith Lindsay? She went, yeah, that one.
Yeah. It was a natural magnet to be drawn to something like this as well.
I thought, my God, you got a famous dad. I didn't even know this about you. You are a famous man. Welcome, Keith Lindsay. It's nice to see you, sir.
Lovely to be here, Gareth, and nice to see you after all this time as well. Yeah.
You're one of the most famous voiceover artists in the country.
Yes, legendary voiceover. Not so much these days, but in the old days, yeah, you used to always have to shuffle the adverts around to make sure you weren't overexposed.
No, but I mean, your voice, even now hearing it, I can remember 100 different commercials might have heard.
Oh, very, very much so. Paid for private school education, so I'm very grateful.
Yeah, you mean for your son, not for
I wasn't
you.
The only one looking for the future.
Now, it must be quite exciting to... First of all, for you to be together in a studio, I don't know how often that's ever happened.
When I wasn't answering the calls on the competition lines at 5 and living under the sound desk, then yeah, this is the only other time we've actually been on. No, we've been on air before.
Yeah.
Have you?
Yes, we have.
Yeah. A few times. I mean, we had a community station we were involved in and everything like that, and a few interviews there were had. So, yeah, it was nice.
It's always nice to have someone knowing something about tech.
And the other thing about Brett is that he's just built his own studio at your office.
Great. Yes, yeah. And it wasn't meant to be a competition.
No, but you're obsessed. I mean, this is clearly some kind of...
It's in the genes, Gareth.
It is. It's in the tartan or something.
All right, now Lindsay is Scottish.
Very much so,
You bring that up. Mm. It's a good, solid Scottish surname.
It's a good S-A-Y, no E-Y.
Oh, that's right.
Irish
Absolutely.
E-Y.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. But... You obviously, I mean, with your career, let's just give people an idea, because I think a lot of people might not remember, even though many people will. I mean, you were on Springbok Radio.
Well, for me, it started way back before that, up in Rhodesia. I was the age of 6, 7.
Yeah?
Won a talent competition then, Gareth.
6.
And I was miming to Andy Stewart, and Andy Stewart was a Scottish singer who obviously wore a kilt, and so Mom dressed me up into this, you know, and away I went, and you'll do well, son, just do it, and off I went, and won the thing. And then we created what was then on Rhodesian TV at that stage, Tele 5 Club, and I was the youngest TV DJ at the age of 7, 8, 9.
This is way ahead of its time.
Yeah, and all in black and white, of course, because there was no color at that stage in Rhodesia, but there was around the world. And then we took it up from there, and then never left the broadcast areas at all until never, actually. Even now, we still get involved in things, which is lovely. You know,
but I 200 think years, most of us probably remember, like, Springbok Radio 5 FM.
Yeah.
It was still called Radio 5 at the
time, right? Radio Faith, Radio 5. Yeah.
And then you've also been involved in other radio stations since then. We'll pick up on that in a moment or two. But do you still have people... I don't know if this happens to you. It probably happens more to you than to most of us. But when you're standing in a queue and you're talking to someone and someone turns around and they go... Hang on, I know that voice.
Yeah. Lovely, the theater of the mind with radio. They haven't seen you, but they hear the voice and they go, you can see them curious. And then they say, are you? Yes. Yeah.
That's nice.
But he does have a radio voice. And that's as the son, you get to hear the other side that isn't the celebrity
Well, he's
side.
Not being disciplined, you know.
Yeah.
Now you listen to me.
This is the Brett Cameron Lindsay, what are you doing? And that's definitely not radio voice. And it's cool to hear that. But there is definitely that turn. It's sometimes you'll answer the phone when you were growing up and it'll be like, talking to us as dad, and then all of a sudden be like, hey, Keith Lindsay speaking, and be like, oh, wow, okay, how you doing?
Could you hear the difference immediately?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a tone thing.
It's Mr. DJ, yeah. Was it cool, though?
Was it fun having a dad who was famous? Because radio people really were famous. I mean, these days you could say, well, some of them are, some of them aren't. But in those days, they were the real stars.
I think I only realized it a lot later. Like, we kind of were brought up. Yeah. We were quite young when dad was on radio and kind of just – I mean, you were doing it since you were five. Mm. So we kind of just thought that was the norm, really. looking back, though, there were some odd times where I remember some of the other 5FM or Radio 5 DJs getting rescued in the middle of the Cape Town Harbour NSRI showing.
Event days
and it was like,
things,
yeah. That was odd. Like, all of a sudden, we were like VIP, like being able to sit right in the front. I'm like, why don't we do this anymore? Oh, that's why. It's like, so things changed over time. But yeah, I mean, I think looking back, we can appreciate it more.
Then. Look, I mean, I don't have to make any bones about it. I love radio, so I care about this stuff. Mm. But I think a lot of people, it's just sort of, this is cliched as all hell, but it's almost like it's the soundtrack to your day-to-day life. And sometimes that voice is just, it gives you a feeling, that's all.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's memories in music, but there's also memories in voices. The tragedy with, I think, can I say, frequency broadcast radio, AM, FM these days, is that it's lost its personality. It's become clinical. And what happens is I've got to push button A to make button C work. And in the middle of it, I've got to think about how clever I should be, and I'm trying to promote myself, as opposed to enjoying the show, enjoying the music, and being one with your audience.
Why do you think that happened?
Money. The industry became... When it started, SABC sold off the regional stations. It started then. And then it kind of fractured again with the community station build-outs as well. But you know, every now and again, you get that little odd moment. And again, that odd DJ who's on a community station now, maybe more than ever before. And you think, oh, that was it. That nice moment to remember. But I think radio itself, tragically, has lost its passion to be one with your audience. And as you say, to make the memories of life. You know, that's how I feel about it.
What used to excite you about it when you would switch on that microphone?
Well, being involved in radio and TV and productions and everything like that, radio for me is dynamic in its immediacy. As soon as you switch on that microphone, you are part of somebody's life. And to have that interaction is dynamic. It's really so exciting. And then when you play again, as you say, a song or you read out a request or do whatever we used to do in the old days, before SMSs, we used to have the people write in postcards. It was amazing.
Over here we've got a letter from Margaret in Salisbury. And Margaret says that she thoroughly enjoyed the last 6 weeks of shows, but of course she sent this letter in February and it's now May.
That's it. Exactly.
I hope Margaret's still alive. Margaret, if you're still alive, why don't you call us on the telephone? Here's the number to dial. And remember, ask the switchboard if you could come through to the radio studio.
And that's why the Futurology show is such a good show, because we're still answering some of those questions.
Yeah, so there we go. So that's it.
Yeah, and television, Pop Stars was the first reality show of its kind in South Africa. Mm-hmm. In fact, you brought it to Africa. You did Uganda and a bunch of others as well, didn't you?
Yeah, Uganda, Tanzania. We also did Kenya. We looked up at Nigeria, but it was just too far away, and it wasn't right politically at that time to do it. And that was 2008, 2007.
So did you buy the license for that format?
Yeah, I was overseas on one of our holidays and I watched the British Pop Stars, the first one. Thought, this is dynamic. It involves people to be interactive and actually show off their talent. And on the internet, just went around saying who has, and eventually got Des Monahan, who lived in Australia, and he has the rights. And so I said, look, we're in Africa. I want to bring this program across, and we want to bring it here. And he said, well, Africa's not even on my target map. I haven't even looked at Africa. Go for it. So that's how we did it. And we brought it in, and then, of course, the Coca-Cola guys got involved, and away we went for three seasons here in South Africa. And you were on it as well, part of it, before your fame to, you know, Idols.
Yeah, I remember it was a bit of a sensation when Coca-Cola Pop Stars, as it was called, came onto TV, because we hadn't seen anything like that before. Mm. And it gave people a real opportunity to show off what they could do.
Well, like Jamali to this day. I mean, correct. The longest, kind of most successful all-girl group in South Africa, which is lovely.
And they came second, which is the thing that always...
Isn't that nice?
That
the
always
underdog
gets
always
me.
Comes right.
Yeah.
You know?
But it must have been an exciting thing to do television as well. I mean, you say you started so early, but there are huge differences between TV and radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mindset. Workflow. Totally different, but as rewarding, because you are, again, communicating. And I think that's in my blood, is to be communicative. You know, talk to
people. But in radio, you kind of have to paint the picture a lot more. Mm. You can't rely on that visual medium to be able to convey the message. So it has to be entertaining enough for people to want to keep listening.
But you have the most powerful weapon of all. You have imagination.
Yes.
And when you engage people,
unique experiences for each person,
imaginatively, then suddenly real magic happens.
just on that, if I may, I was about what would be about 76, 78, and I was asked, like as you have been many years, to be the MC at a fashion show. You know? Yeah. So you arrive at the fashion show. Everyone's heard you, but they've never seen you. Now I'm not good looking guy. I'm a good looks for radio.
Don't worry.
And of course, I arrive.
I feel your pain.
With a little kind of extra cushion on the stomach, and I arrive and. They're still looking for Keith Lindsay. And I said, I'm here. And their faces dropped.
They were so sad.
Oh, yes. Mm. It's not the imagination that they had of you on radio. But, of course, when you start talking and you get on the stage and you do your personality, but it all fell into place.
No, but it's still not nice to be greeted by, oh, you don't look like I thought you would.
but that's what happens on radio. Whereas TV, they know who exactly they're talking to.
Did you... While Brett was growing up, did you kind of try to expose him to all of this stuff? Because it was such an unique and interesting world to have been in. Mm-hmm. There weren't a lot of people in broadcasting or in television. Mm. And for kids, it's really exciting.
Yeah, we had our own studios as well. I mean, I was on radio and TV, but we ran a production company.
Yeah.
And we had a full 24-track, 2-inch recording session studio there. And we had our first, I remember the old clatter system, which you had your interlock system that used to do video and sound. And as you'd play it, it would slam in. But we'd have the kids over there more than not. And
I know how to, splice tape.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know, and generally you find the best bits are on the floor, as they say in the editing suites, but you can't find them again. So you carry on, you know. But that's, yeah. So Brett was just, and Darren and James, we're all just part of the life growing experience. Mm. And I think it was in your blood from then, you know.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah.
Now, you also went into something that I've never really wanted to do and never enjoyed when I was, you know, was thrust into it on campus radio, for example, but like management, actually running the station and making decisions and hiring the talent and firing the talent.
Hmm.
How was that experience when you've been the guy who's on the air? And I mean, I hate management.
Yeah.
I always loathe them. They were the most evil people in the universe. I used to go to sleep at night dreaming horrible things would happen to them.
There's some nice management people around, but answer, I mean, honestly, you know, honestly, gray hair that I have now, I actually got because I was managing 17 egos on a national station, and each ego is as bad as a 3-year-old kid.
So who were the big stars at the time that you were in charge there?
Tony Blewett, Kevin Savage, Alex J.
You and Barney started together.
Well, Barney and I started Barney. Barney was my ops and got Barney through, and eventually Barney was on there. But at that stage, we had to find new blood. There was Brian Oxley as well who came in. Phil Wright, God bless him. And, of course, Chris Pryor, who was the rock professor in those days. So all that team were there, and it was fantastic. Louis Karpus on sport.
PNF, Sasha Montenegro.
Yeah, all of those. Well, then we started the younger team. We got Sasha, who was a record rep from EMI.
Yeah.
He used to come in with his little box and say, no, you've got more to do. You've got this young guy here, ENF, is bugging me every day. Why don't you two go to the studio and play?
So you put them together.
Yeah, and then F and Martinengo came about.
Right.
Then the other guy came in. We put in the day of cassettes, we said Russell Pope was our head of engineering, lovely guy, and still is. And I said, Russell, let's put a talents thing on. Offer the guys to put in their stuff on cassette and bring them in. So we sat there, Russell and I, hour after hour after hour. Got Glenn Hicks involved as well because we got tired. And we found this young guy who arrived, bald-headed, named Mark Pilgrim.
Yes.
And we said, sit down. Come on in. Great voice. Let's do a radio show. And off he went. And then, of course, it was Tove Kane we found out as well. And, oh, it was lovely. It was just great.
So
to
I think you must be pleased to have been around. And obviously, they'll give you credit because each of them has in their own way. But it's quite nice to have been part of creating an opportunity for those people.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Lovely to see. And today, I mean, Barney is still Peter Pan Barney. I mean, he's still on radio doing his own thing. And lovely to hear and see. It's
I mean, he talks about mosh pits, but if he got into one now, I think he'd hurt himself.
I think he would too.
But he's got his cane to keep him safe now, which is good. So.
We certainly work the mosh pits.
It was also an exciting time in radio because the time you're talking about is sort of just – prior to and after the major changes this country was going through.
Oh, yeah. Both sides of the seesaw.
Right in the middle of it.
Yeah. So you're responsible in a way also for carrying across positive messages, kind of making people feel a certain way.
And also anti-establishment from both sides. I mean, we had to run, I mean, 5 FM, as it was a national station. Yeah. So even in the seesaw of, shall we say, the era before now, yeah. we had to question, and we did. We questioned.
Did you ever get into trouble for
that? Oh, we were fired. We had a weekend show, Barney and I, Terrible Twins. We were on air on Saturday. We were fired on Monday. And then Malcolm Russell, who was the boss then, used to phone us on Thursday and say, okay, look, last time, come on in again this weekend. Or if we would go, and Barney and I would rebel a bit on air, and Tony Sanderson used to do the news then as well in those days. And then we were fired again on the Monday. But, yeah, it was like that. But we had to push envelopes because you're speaking for and on behalf of. And it was great. And I think that was one of the successes of that station at that time. Then when it came to where we are now, and I'm now management, as you say, we carried that thought through, which was not met with great rejoicing. Put it that way.
from your point of view, I mean, all of your friends must have been listening to this stuff, and you were like, yeah, my dad's involved there.
Yeah.
Must have been quite cool. Does make you...
It was cool, yeah. I think the top 40, I mean, we always knew what the top 40 was. We always knew. So, like, even if kids didn't listen to dad, they would be asking us, and we were always the guys, like... it was somewhat unfair. Like, for some reason, we always were the guys that had to present at school. You always picked on, like, your dad's a DJ. You must be able to
do
this.
What to do, yeah.
Go. Dance, monkey, dance. Kind of fun.
Yeah. But it's... And sometimes a little annoying because they sort of... They stereotype you into the role of
the
father.
You must be your dad, yeah.
It's like these Hollywood actors whose kids end up being cast in their movies. Mm. It can be a little frustrating.
I think at the time, I mean, as kids, you don't really pick up on those things, kind of things. You kind of just have to go with it. But I think looking back at it now, I mean, it's kind of put me in good stead for where we are now. I mean, people drop you into opportunity, or you see opportunity maybe ahead of someone, and you're not scared to jump into it. Because, that's what I'm used to. I'm used to being dropped into it. So let's go.
And Brett, for you, I mean, with what you do these days at Big Brave and the kind of stuff that you guys do in app development and design and creative thinking and kind of coming up with solutions for people.
Changing the future.
Yeah, changing the future. It's just the next evolution of the same kind of stuff your dad was doing.
Pretty much.
In audio and in visual media back then.
Yeah, I don't know if there was a grand plan to it all, but it definitely has started to pan out for how we're doing things today, which is...
That's amazing.
This is amazing.
Amazing stuff today. I mean, you know.
Do you understand all of it? Because I don't
know. No, I don't understand all of it. I mean, I am now living my dad's memories of when I used to be excited at Brett's age, going to him saying, I'm doing this and ready, and we're doing this and ready. Dad, you could see Dad going, that's very good, son. All right, carry on. And here we come with Brett, and Brett's saying, well, I've got to do anything. Okay, I know half of that, but I don't understand what this side means.
Fair,
and I'm going, no,
do your thing.
But it's lovely. It's
what
amazing.
Do you think?
Would you like a whiskey so you can slow down?
Would you be able to distill like the best things that you learnt from your dad when you were little that have turned into useful things now?
I think dad's always – there was a great sort of divide between family time and public – the public eye, which was really cool. So even to today, it doesn't matter how hectic it gets, I can still go home and just really enjoy bathing the kids, and because I'm a dad now as well. So I mean, like, to go home and just say it's family time now, and like actually fight for it and see the benefit of why you need family time. Because if you get lost in the crazy, it's an abyss. So I think that's one great thing, was like we went on family holidays and we appreciated time together, and that was really cool. But we knew that was sort of the flip side, and we had to accept sort of. Not the good with the bad, but there was busy times where we were like, well, okay, we didn't see dad for a while. But yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely put me in good stead. I don't think anything really throughout that entire experience of growing up has harmed me or my brothers.
Yeah, I suppose kind of a privileged thing to have, because I have a good relationship with my dad, but you hear these stories in South Africa about these just horrible situations. Yeah. Kids either grow up without any
awful.
Father,
Very
any
sad.
Kind of male role model at all.
Yeah.
Or they're a horrible role model. They're just a mean, nasty, aggressive, hostile person to be around.
Yeah.
Must be terrible.
Yeah. No, I think that's a big discussion.
Now, three boys, right?
Three sons.
I mean,
Brett, Darren, and James.
Your poor wife.
The queen of the family. What do you mean, the poor wife?
Well
looked after and well regarded. And
then my brother went and had another two more boys. So there's the Lindsay name is going to continue for a little while.
Yeah. There's no chance of that dying out.
No, not at all.
Yeah, she got a princess though. So my daughter Addison is the first princess in the family. So mum's really enjoyed that. I think it was like a 45-year gap or something between Lindsay girls.
I think this is it's a very. It seems to me like it's an important thing for a son to be able to appreciate and look up to and have a good relationship with their dad. It's really important. I don't think people in any way have a conception of how complicated life must be for a young guy, particularly in arduous circumstances. And a lot of people in this country grow up in a tough way, right? To not have some strong backbone in the family to be able to rely on when you're confused, when times are tough, when you don't know how to treat women, or you're not sure what's right and wrong. Those are the kinds of things provided by a dad. I don't want to get too philosophical, but do you agree?
But here in South Africa, we read these horrendous stories, as you say, of these child-led families because of HIV and stuff and all circumstances. And your heart does go out to them. I mean, they do not know that role. They don't understand who or how or what to do because they haven't been given that opportunity to be led or given experience by. And that does break your heart when you see it. And there's a lot of good people involved in outreach to them, but you cannot reach them all. And there is the gaps, which are very sad, very sad.
So as a dad, when you've got three boys, are you particularly aware of like male things? Like do you try to bring certain education into their lives at an early age to teach them about being a guy, being responsible and respectful, kind of how to deal with your feelings? Because a lot of guys don't know how to deal with that shit.
So I'm just going to just drop you before you answer, but I never learned to shave because Dad has a beard.
Yeah, always have, you see.
So who taught you that?
Well, you kind of figure it out from the adverts. but I mean, that was the one thing. I think Dad shaved once in the entire...
Oh, I gave you that fright, yes. I remember.
Yeah. We went out to a game lodge and Dad was like, I'm just going to shave. We're here for the week.
I was going
to
say, when you walked in, before we carry on with this discussion, you walked in, you haven't changed.
A little rounder.
I don't know. I mean, I recognized you straight away when you walked in, and I haven't seen you, you know, I've never met you before, but this is the first time I've actually seen you, and I remember pictures of you.
Yeah.
So you're doing okay there.
Yeah, we're doing fine.
Scottish genes age well.
Oh, yeah. Semi-retirement is wonderful. Yeah.
But do you know what I mean about this whole thing of being the manly, man? What is it all about?
Mom was more the educator in that regard than I was. I mean,
I think it was more of an example than a sit-down lesson.
Yeah.
What I do rather than what I say.
Yeah, I mean, Dad would always, like, this is how to look after Mom. And there was those kinds of things, like, if I'm not here, then... Like
you're in charge.
But like look after Mom. Yeah. Back it up. And like, I think responsibility for kids, male responsibility is a thing that's sometimes is missing in society these days. But I think that's something that wasn't necessarily extrovertedly mentioned. It was kind of like
you didn't have a lecture. You didn't sit down.
Oh, we had plenty of lectures.
but in this case, they didn't. All right, boys, this is how you're going to be a man.
But I think the nice thing is, I mean, we're three boys. Darren and I are closer in age, so we were kind of left to not up to our own devices, but we were allowed to do, and we could learn by mistake. And I think there were some really good, valuable lessons there. Like we could go and climb trees, and if we fell out of them and something happened, then we learned. Okay, but I think I've definitely seen a difference in being a dad with a daughter than Dad was, I think, with us. But there was no sort of, you must be the manliest man ever.
But do you think you're overprotective of your daughter because, you know, with girls it's different? Like if it's a boy, he goes climbing a tree, and as you say, he falls out. You're like,
I think you were pulling Addison out of a tree yesterday.
Yeah, I was. Exactly that. So I know I was blessed with three sons because I would have been totally protective. I think I would have... Totally been, you know,
like a helicopter.
Oh, absolutely!
Yeah.
She's got you wrapped around her finger, which is good.
It's great. Yeah. It's lovely being a granddad.
But I mean, we didn't go toss cabers or anything. We went to go watch a few of those. Yeah, we did,
but we didn't do it ourselves. No.
I think the Scottish tradition is also quite a male-centric thing as well. I mean, there's quite a lot of
you have to be when you wear a skirt.
Yeah, you're kind of tough.
You've got a very neutral sort of accent too, which helped. Because if you were more Scottish, it probably wouldn't have worked.
No,
but your father spoke like that, and your mother did.
But I mean, being born in Rhodesia as it was, and being, you know, to Scottish parents. I mean, when I go back to see my parents, it clicks in. It's
really?
So crazy how it clicks in.
You start sounding more Scottish.
Oh yeah, it's you know, it all falls into place, and especially when we're with greater family at a wedding or something overseas, and it's like, hi, how you doing? You're fine. You go, it's lovely to see you again. You know, and it all just kicks in. But when you come back home, so to speak, it's like you're back home. You know, it's amazing that.
Yeah, that's good fun though.
Tell me about the stuff that used to piss your dad off when you were little. Like the things that you would get in trouble for.
Well, Dad's got a lot of freckles, so you should say if he if he gets angry, his freckles glow. So we used to try not to let that happen. But
what used to make him cross?
What did we do? We did a lot, actually. I'm trying to like pick up
just
one
normal
or two
kid things, like, you know, fighting in the back of the car when we're traveling. And
well, my younger brother stole the car once, and that was fun. Yeah, I think that got everybody's attention. I think it was quite a momentous nuclear meltdown that night. But luckily, I'd left home by the time. I just heard the fallout afterwards. No, I was pretty good.
What's your position in the family? One, two, or three?
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest.
Yeah, so
okay.
Early days, I kind of got used to getting the blame for a lot of the shit that I didn't actually get to do. So I would probably rebel with certain things. If I'm going to get in shit, I'm going to do it anyway.
Might as well go the full hog.
And then I think I got slightly wiser as I got older and figured I could the less mum and dad know, the better.
Mm.
So I think I may have gotten away with a bit much, which I'm not going to sort of allude to just yet.
No, but I mean, if I think about growing up, and my parents didn't have a lot of rules. I mean, we would disappear sometimes, especially during school holidays. We'd disappear in the morning and we'd go to some corner of the property or whatever. They wouldn't see us until the sun came down.
No, same as us.
And they wouldn't ask questions and they wouldn't say, you know, are you okay? Have you been it felt almost like the world was a little bit less dangerous in some ways. Do you think it's harder, Keith, now to raise kids?
I think so.
Than it was then?
Well, I think so now as an older person looking back, and also, as you say, we're not in the bigger plots like we all had, and there is a lot more concern and discernment you've got to take as a parent, I would believe, about your child. You can't just get in the bike and cycle to school unless you really know the route is safe. Traffic is so bad, and it's congested. More so than ever before. I mean, when they were growing up, it was like we were in the country out in Glen Austin, Midrand. It was like wonderful.
We're going on our bikes. Okay, be back for summer.
See you later. See you later.
And
five
you'd ride around for miles.
We got lost.
Yeah.
We rode so far away, we got lost.
But you didn't panic because you could just stop and ask someone and they'd help you.
Yeah. These days you couldn't do that.
So. Yeah. Well, you could, but might be a creep. Like Bill Cosby.
Might lose your bike.
You might lose your bike.
I'll take
to walk home. But it is interesting to contrast through the generations how this works. Yeah. What kinds of things do you, when you're doing them, suddenly go, oh my God, I'm being like my father?
Or shouting. I mean, I don't have freckles that glow, but I mean, there's definitely, I think, We had a good routine, I think, growing up. And I think that's one thing I've instilled into my daughter as well. It's kind of like, it's bath time now. Like,
and she knows.
And it's happening. And then looking after mom, like, don't talk back to mom, especially if I'm here. Like, no, that's not on. And there's those kinds of things. There's definitely, I'm quite a grumpy dad, actually, sometimes. I have quite a bit of,
I've
surprised myself.
There's times when I get scared when I listen to him. Yeah. Like, oh, my goodness.
And I think one thing that dad had, I mean, obviously, making a career in using your voice, dad had a great shout.
Stern voice.
Oh, no, a great shout. If dad was angry, there was no mistaking. There was like, it's time now. It's happening. And, like, I think I've kind of got a bit of that as well. Like, I can shout and, like, shame, my daughter sometimes gets more scared of me shouting than she does of anything else that could ever happen. And it's like, you've just got to be mindful of how you're molding the youngsters.
Usually it's a full name approach there. It's,
That's
Rose Lindsay.
Addison Rose Lindsay.
Yes, Papa.
That's
who knows, boy. Already, you see. So.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly my reaction after I've done it. I'm like, oh, shit, that was like, Dad, oh, shame. Sorry, little one. You're trying to still instill discipline, but without
you
looking.
You turned out all right, though, son. You turned out all right.
I mean, you must be pleased with how he's turned out.
Oh, it's, yeah, it's great.
Decent lovely job.
Both Brett, Darren, and the three of them.
Yeah, they're giving each other a high five.
Well done, that's great.
Well deserved.
Actually, it's quite fun to stand back and look at them.
It's because he sent the complaints line was all by post. So.
what's the best part of being a granddad? Because you don't have the hands-on responsibility, but you get to have all the fun.
Oh, you do. And it's exactly that. I mean, you hear all those stories and you think, but my goodness me, it's been an absolute journey of joy. It really has, from the first grandson, Charlie, to now Eddie, and then, of course, Oliver. And just to be with them and to share with them different things, it's nice. We can do things that we couldn't probably do with our kids, her.
Get them hopped up in sweets.
Come on, let's go and do this. And, we're going to go and have a milkshake. Now, you want a milkshake? Yeah, I want a milkshake. Yeah, so does Papa. So let's go and have a milkshake.
Brilliant.
And it's nice. Nice escape moments, which is important, I think, for younger kids,
Because
he can discipline the rest.
Well, exactly. You don't
it's not my role anymore.
You don't have to worry about that
stuff. Hand them back.
And if they do get out of control, you just hand them back to them as well.
Yeah.
You don't have to ever be the bad person. And they just love granddad.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Papa. Mocker and Papa, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Papa. My brother's kids call my dad that as well. Yeah. I think that like the routine thing you mentioned is kind of important too.
Oh, yeah.
If you think about things like regularly having dinner together or lunch together, this is, again, this is not something that if you're rich or poor, it makes any difference. It's about the time you set aside to do this stuff.
Yeah.
Because you actually listen to each other. You actually hear each other's stories. You get a chance to connect properly with family.
And that's exactly what it's about. It's like, I mean, if you see the movie, the TV series Blue Bloods,
yeah,
and they have their family meal. Mm. It's time to forget the world. It's time to focus on our world. And it's who we are. How are you? Where are you? What can we talk about? How can we be there to help you? That's magic. That is the moment, I think, it's best place for any family.
Yeah.
As you say, it doesn't matter if you're rich, poor, or otherwise.
Yeah.
You can all do that.
Well, people will use excuses, obviously, to not have to do these things. But that's something that's accessible to everybody.
Mm.
Do you know the story of, apparently, Magnum P.I., what's his name?
Tom Selleck.
Apparently, he asked for that to be put into the script.
Oh, wow.
He's Good very life. Much about character and kind of honoring your promise and doing what you say and saying what you do and all that kind of thing. So maybe that's why it's such an important part of that show. Because someone brought that up the other day.
Great series.
It tells
Great.
Me the story.
There's one thing, I mean, with growing up in the digital age now, is that I don't think parenting is that different from back then. I just think there are a lot more opinions flying around, and everybody's sort of very cautious about how
so
and
much.
What you can maybe sort of kind of do as a parent.
Yeah. I mean, you're exposed to so much now on Facebook and Twitter and how to, you should do, and perhaps you should try. You think, no, bring yourselves up. You know what I mean?
It's almost too much info.
It is. I think it's info.
Breeding neurotic parents.
Yeah, could do that.
What do you think of social media, Keith?
Love it. Never had it at your age.
Sure.
But love it for what it can do. Dislike it because of its interruption at times. You know, they say it's supposed to make our world easier or anything like that. Mm. But social media can interrupt a moment if you're at home and you're talking and bing, 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 ting, 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 and things happen. And you think, no, come on. This is not time out.
I do put my phone in silent when I come around.
Yeah.
I try.
For what it was invented for and for how it can lock people together, I think it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Wish I'd added in radio days.
Well, I mean, you can record an entire radio show on your phone.
It's great, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. I mean, we could do interviews now. I travel the world still taking my little mobile record machines and do voiceovers for whoever wants in. Doing audiobooks now. We're exploring how to get into audiobooks. And I used to read tape aids for the blind. And now we're putting that edge into learning. And it's fascinating. Love it. Mm. Loving it, you know.
Did you enjoy doing voiceovers? I mean, you're still doing them, right?
Yeah.
Is it fun? Because I hated it. I'll tell you why. You sit down there. You walk into a studio. There's some clients there and they're busy with their script, their precious script, and they come to you and they go, can you put a little more emphasis on the word is, please? And you go, sure. So you do it again and you put the word is up front.
I know, we like the first one after like take 14.
And I know for you it's probably one or two takes and you've got it down because you're a pro.
Mm.
But I used to get so annoyed because these people would want you to read it, and eventually it didn't even sound like a human.
It didn't sound like you actually reading it. Yeah.
Well,
and
you want to say, well,
the sincerity's not there.
Let someone else do this. And also, then you have to invoice them, and it's like a couple of thousand rand if you're lucky, a couple of hundred rand if you're at the bottom end of that pyramid. And it's not a way to make a living.
Oh, it is.
Really?
Oh, so much so.
Private schooling.
You know what's nice about it? It's social interaction with different people. So that gives me a challenge. And I look at it as a challenge when I go into it.
Awful people.
Yeah, and as I get older, and now, of course, they get younger. So these youngsters are now telling me what to do. You know, anything. It's a great thing.
And they say to you, are you sure you pronounce that way?
Exactly.
And you're like, yes, I actually know this.
Yeah. I have done this before. Yes. And But it's fun.
I heard I was watching Guardians of the Galaxy last
the new
night.
One.
Yeah, the new one. And the sovereign, the high priestess or whatever, she says genealogy. And I got annoyed. Like I'm an old man. I'm getting annoyed about things like that. I'm like, no, it's genealogy.
Yeah.
Get it right.
Get it right. Get that pronunciation.
Do you get annoyed with those kinds of things?
I've never been a stickler on pronunciation because people do see. I mean, the funniest one was Edinburgh for Edinburgh for me, for Edinburgh. one of our newsreaders. And, of course, there's a whole lot of other ones that came across, and you probably heard them by legend stories. But, and some of them are too rude to even say, you know. But like Queen Elizabeth XI. Said today. That was classic for me when I heard that. And I thought, no, come on.
You've got to do the soccer one. I know it is.
Oh yes, the fuck up.
Yeah, and that went around.
That was on. That was all on SABC TV, wasn't it?
Well, they learned it from ZMC.
You had the Cape to Rio yacht race.
Yeah,
the Cape to 10 round yacht race. That was wonderful. It was that's a moment, you see. So yeah, you allow that to happen, but yeah, you have to be right when you're doing news. You have to be a different person.
Yeah.
You have to be right doing sports review, and because you're telling information as is, and names on sport is has always been
a
challenge
to me. But it's a nightmare because. Oh. With all these Russian tennis players for the moment.
Two alphabets and all spelled backwards. And you're going, what?
Can we have one vowel in
there? Yeah, please. Please.
One vowel for the Eastern Europeans. Do you have the feeling that you can manipulate your voice to do exactly what you need it to do? Because it's a kind of a mastery thing. This might be a complicated or perhaps a philosophical or a slightly numinous question. When you are talking about things that you're really interested in, you sound a certain way.
Oh, yeah.
And when you talk about things that you're just
bland,
superficially getting through, you can also, you have a certain sound to your voice.
Oh, yeah.
Do you, because you're able to do that yourself, pick up on it very quickly when other people are doing it?
Very much so. Very much so. When you're attending a public speaking event or something like that, you can, like Brett says, there's a DJ voice and there's a your own voice. There's a presentation voice, there's a style.
It's
corporate and hard sell.
Does it drive you crazy?
No, not at all. I actually am, again, intrigued by who the person is and how they actually deliver it. And I listen more to the tonality than I do sometimes in the messaging. But it's actually fascinating to hear that people can use the voice. And it's such a lovely tool to have. You're blessed with it, so why not use it? Mm. And if you get excited about something, you can bring people to great exciting like euphoria because you actually sell it right as opposed to, well, this is a great day, you know.
Yeah, but there's also that fake sound. And that always drove me mad as a listener long before I got into radio myself.
Where you'd hear people talking like this on the radio.
That's forced.
And you'd think,
And then you'd meet them, and they don't sound at all like that. And it's so frustrating because you're like, oh, you've been lying to me the whole time.
Shatter the dream.
You're not that excited. You're a depressed egomaniac.
I'm here to get some Prozac.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Hi, everybody. I'm here to tell you about the next hit song.
Yeah. No, I'm not that bad.
No, you're not.
No, I know, but just generally it's –
But there are people,
people who do that.
But it's definitely a skill. I mean, I grew up with that and listened to all of those things, and I'm nowhere near about picking up that level of tonality that you are. But I got a chance to do a voiceover when I was 16 or something, and it was the end tag, and I delivered this tag the way I thought it was supposed to be, and the guy was like, no, you sound like a transatlantic DJ, could you try to do something? I was like, I'm not gonna get this right. He's like, say it like that. I'm like, no. Genealogy. it's a skill sometimes that you can have as well. So
but Keith, don't you think it's something that some people are just better at than others? Sounding natural.
Oh, yeah.
Sounding natural.
It is a gift.
It's tough.
Radio voice, or shall I say, the voice is a gift.
Because people clam up, right? It's like being able to sing. You think you can, and you're doing it in the shower,
and
you're doing
it
in the car.
But you can't.
And then as soon as you've got a real stage and a real audience, you go, oh my God, I can't do this.
I'm terrified. Too well by listening to how many thousand?
Well,
you know, it comes across, and you can see it. You can hear it, rather.
Don't want to hear another person sing badly ever again. Because I got a chance to be on the Pop Stars TV crew to learn,
obviously.
And one of the jokes, I think, or one spin-off version in one of the African countries, we did 8 weeks of talent search, listening to 10,000 people sing badly, and maybe a few that actually made it through. And the client's joke was to not joke, but their wrap-up party was a karaoke session. I was like, are you serious?
What, are you trying to punish yourself? Yeah.
Well, are we doing this again? And, there were some great things that happened. But
you're right. Voice is a wonderful tool.
Yeah.
And if you are doing – just give me an idea here. So you're doing a hard sell for somebody on lawnmowers. Where's your head at when you record that? Because people often will listen to the ad and think, I wonder what that guy was thinking at the time he said this. You can hear that maybe some of the time he wasn't actually thinking about lawnmowers. It's like, this is the most amazing thing you will ever get.
And for only R9.99, you know. And what's more, if you call now, that side of it is
work. Who do you
picture
you're talking to?
Good question. I'm actually hard selling the sell. So
you're not focused on
the
person.
I don't focus the face or anything like that. It's the product, yeah. And it's the way to sell a product best. So if it's white, it's a USB there. If it's got so many horsepower, there's a thing to get. So you say 185 horsepower as opposed to 185 horsepower. No, yeah. 185 horsepower. Mm. You get that, you know.
There's that voice. That's
yes,
the
it
one.
Comes with it.
Wow. Well, I mean, you seem to have raised a decent enough son to maturity. He seems to be coping on his own.
Oh, absolutely. It's great to see.
The rest is a solo mission.
Knowing the investment's working well. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, are you the kind of person who's not going to stop? I mean, you're not exactly ancient. There's life within the old dog yet. You're not going to stop anytime soon and sit quietly at home and read books and deteriorate.
I have done. So.
You have?
50% of me is still there.
Yeah.
The other 50% in the last 2 years has mellowed and loving it, being at home longer with my wife, taking time out to read a book.
Yeah.
Read a book for someone else.
Having time is quite a special thing now.
And waking up not to get to have to go, but because I need to go and get something. That's been a wonderful mellowing, I think, in the last 2 years. Mm. But there's still 50% of me that every now and again you get excited about something and you think, we could do this. We could take that on. That young challenge and passion comes back. You know?
And maybe that's a streak you also passed on to your kids. I mean, you were always looking for opportunities. It wasn't just like you were an employee.
It's not like
you were just doing something to earn the money. Yeah. And clearly that's something that, you know, Brett, you feel very strongly about.
I think all three boys are not employees. They are all leaders in their own rights, in their own areas. And I think that's been good to see. I think that there's nothing wrong with an employee. It's just your mindset. It's just that you've got to be capable, able, and you've got to get out there and do what you want to do.
I think the one thing is if you can add value.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Don't sit there and watch something crumble when you know you can do something. Like, don't get too caught up in what everybody else is trying to do.
But there is a competitive element to that which is quite useful. And I think with three boys, you must have seen them competing with each other in some way, shape, or form almost every day.
Yeah, there was blood.
But it leads to innovation because
for sure.
We're always trying to – in families, I'm talking about normal male behavior is one-upmanship the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
It's the way we are.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that we're not necessarily horrible to each other.
It's just natural.
Right.
Yeah, you've got to grow and be there. Yeah.
Right. So when you see that with kids as a dad – do you have to intervene, or do you just let them?
No, you let it roll for a while, but obviously when he gets to the blood stages, you make sure you get in before it. But it's nicer that they mellow and meld themselves. They've got to panel beat each other to make their character. And they've got to learn to stand up for each other. I mean, Brett was the eldest.
Yeah.
Darren came along.
Still am. For the
last part, and took on Darren. Kept saying to him, Brett, listen, Sunshine, just now he's going to be bigger than you, and he's going to clap you.
My big little brother.
Brett wouldn't listen to that. And, of course, a year came past, and boom.
What's the age difference between you and Darren?
Two and a bit, almost 3 years.
Yeah. And it happened. And I said, I can remember.
You were horrified, huh?
That's what I've told you about, you know.
I blanked that bit out of my life.
It's gone. And now it's happened again with my two grandsons, Charlie and Oliver. You can see it. And Oliver the other day picked up, and he's a baby, picked up his mother's hockey stick and gave Charlie a good clap. And you can see
little
it
one,
because
the
frustration. That's just natural human.
The hockey stick is bigger than
boy things, you know.
No, I mean, that's what's that saying that I like is history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And it seems to be the truth with my nephews. It's really
fun.
Scary, actually.
Well, listen, you two, it's a pleasure to have you both here. And
thanks for having us.
And happy Father's Day to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, yeah.
Because you say history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. I mean, you couldn't end the interview on a better note than that. It's true in this case. And what a talented family.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
May the Lindsays live long and prosper.
Endure forth.
Endure forth as our family.
There we go. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gareth.
All right, that was the Lindsay interview. So Brett and Keith Lindsay, it was so cool to hear Gareth sort of reminiscing back of the old days of radio. And yeah, Keith goes way back, huh? So if you didn't get all that interview, cliffcentral.com, Gareth's guests. And Gareth will be back tomorrow for 6 a.m. here in SA time. He's in Amsterdam right now. He's going to spend some time away from Germany before he flies back. And hopefully lots of stories. He has assured us there will be lots of stories. Speaking of lots of stories, one man who always seems to have a very long one, Alan Ford.
Why a long story? I don't have long stories.
Alan, there is no such thing as a short story.
I tell good stories, though.
Good. How are you doing? What's in the show today?
First and foremost, before we get to the show, it was great seeing you on Tuesday night.
Oh, thanks, Alan. It was great seeing you, too.
It really was good. And I wanted to just – did you speak about it at all?
I spoke about yesterday, yeah. I take it we didn't win the raffle.
Do you know what? I did win the raffle.
Did you?
Not you. I won the raffle.
Oh, you did.
I won a wine hamper, but I gave it back into the pool, you know, because...
So you auction it.
Alan, I know. That's blasphemous.
I know, but it's so cool to win stuff.
No, that's
Alan. How much wine are we talking about?
I don't know. It was a case of wine.
I won a case of wine yesterday as well.
Well,
really?
At the golf day.
Ben, how can you handle a case of wine when we know, you know, two glasses and you're done?
When you win a case of wine, you mustn't drink it there and then.
Two beers and he's a lush.
She goes, I'm so hungover today. It's embarrassing. Two beers and a tequila. Like, So, Alan.
Really?
So, first and foremost, just to recap, I want to just say it was incredible to firstly jaw and spend and have a dinner, a bride dinner, actually, with the Springbok rugby team. They are so cool. Mm-hmm. They really are. Firstly, I can say it, yeah, they're so hot. They're so hot. Okay, I've just got to say
and
that.
And there's something about the rough and the gruff.
But they're just so great, number one.
Dogs, yeah?
Gruff and gruff. That's what I'm all about. If you can knock yourself senselessly for 80 minutes, 90 minutes.
Oh, no, they're brilliant.
80 minutes. I'm like, you're the one for me.
And then we start off by getting into teams, which I thought was brilliant. And we played a sports quiz together. And you had Springboks in your team with other people, which is, I think, great because you get to interact with
people. A rugby sports quiz or general sports quiz?
A rugby.
How did you fare?
Do you know, pretty well.
Really?
I actually really
Alan knows his rugby. He goes to the matches. He knows his things.
I know rugby. I mean, I even got to Wembley Stadium, and most people didn't.
Oh. Yeah, I actually got that one wrong. I said
I got that right.
Yeah. Isn't that a tennis thing?
No.
Okay,
not tennis.
Cool. Never mind.
Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Right. But it was wonderful, and I mean, Bright Rock put the event together. It was great to see a good cause. It went to a phenomenal cause, and it was nice to see all the players, and you could hang with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing about it, Sia, was it wasn't one of those stiff dinners. You know, you sit there and you go to the stiff functions.
Yeah.
And here it was like a bra, and everyone sat at tables
like
and drank together.
Like a chilled situation.
And then we had, it was so cool because someone came up to me and says, Alan, half your staff is on the stage singing in Swing City. Well, Nathan and Graham both work with me sometimes. They filmed for me. And of course, Nathan's on the show. So they were singing on stage, which was brilliantly, you saw.
Uh-huh.
So it was like, they're not my staff, but I mean, they do a lot of work together.
Yeah.
And it was just an incredible experience. I've just got to say, what a day.
Of the entire, like, national team, who is the one who, like, knows who was probably at the bar all the time, who was ordering an extra round, just downing drinks?
They can't because they're playing this week.
See, what world do you live in?
Wait, like, at they, all? Like, not even...
They are professionals. They take what they do very something. Seriously. Yeah, and sure, they can have a beer or two, but they're not doing tequilas.
I asked the question... I've had tequilas with rugby players before, but after game, post
game. Yeah, sure, obviously. Yeah.
Okay. But this is interesting. I asked, because I had two players that said, I said, guys, can you have a few drinks? I mean, like, and they obviously stay in Monte Casino, because that's where the Zorko Sun puts
Bog
them up.
Town
yeah,
or
saying, they were saying right where the party was happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I said... In your free time, can you do what you want to do? If you want to go gamble, can you gamble?
Yeah.
Can you go to the club
question.
Inside? And free time is free time. They can do whatever they want to do.
Okay. So the whole abstaining from sex thing with rugby players doesn't...
Well, you had to go there.
You had to go there.
I was just saying.
But I'm happy you did.
Thank
because
you.
I did ask the question. No, there's nothing like that. They can't control that. You know what I mean? So, but generally, they try and... what difference does it make? Guys, think about it.
If
you enjoy yourself in the morning, if you catch my drift, you have a fun time, you still get up and have a day.
Exactly.
It's
you'll
normal.
Have an extra pep in your step.
I know. I mean, come on. All right. But that's not the point. The point is they can do what they want to do, but... they're always a Springbok, and that's what they've got to keep in mind. And I said, well, what does that mean? Well, I mean, if they mess up, they're gone.
Yeah,
they're out.
You don't want to take that chance.
Who's your favorite Springbok player?
I'm obsessed with Jesse Creel. I love him, but I've known him since he's a kid.
Uh-huh.
So he's absolutely brilliant. I think he's great. And I mean, all of them are great.
But they are. And Ellen, you know what? I've been to quite a few of these.
I mean, they're brilliant. Mm-hmm.
I've been to quite a few of these events, and you actually... some of the like South Africans who take for granted that we have amazing sports stars in this country. To think like how approachable these guys are, and I know it's their job and they've got to be like polite and all that kind of stuff, but you can see these guys, they're pretty natural at it. They're good people and they're actually just nice guys. And they enjoy each other's company. It's not like, oh got to spend more time with these guys. Another dinner with
you. You see them interacting. You do see clumps, though. Stormers players hanging with Stormers players. Bulls players.
But then you see forwards hanging out with forwards and backlines. But these guys here, they generally like each other.
Yeah.
And it's so cool to see.
There's no air of, like, competition.
Well, there'll always be, but it's healthy. But the thing is, it's like you see these guys interacting with each other. They don't have to. You see, like, the tension on the stage, but then on the back corner somewhere, you'll still see them interacting and being, like, normal, like friends.
Yeah.
And it's so cool to go to these kind of informal events like Bright Rock put on, because I've been to some that are so stale as hell.
I know.
Where you sit at a table and, it's like being at
and you
the
always,
conversation.
And I always find the tanny. I find the tanny that's come with a husband that's got that hair from Boxburg and sits
Why
next to you.
Why do we always want the tanny?
No, but I always find it. And then you can't talk about anything. And then you sit there. This, you could interact with the players. Great. It was really fun.
Yeah.
I mean, the Goliath brothers were there. Ben was there. We had people like Civ.
Siv was the MC. It was great. Anyway, MC. Alan, we can't tell you, Daddy. We need to go.
Not, just one shout out to the Chris Berger, Petra Jackson.
Of course, yeah.
Rugby King Hand Funds, if you can help out. That's a really good course.
What do they do?
They help disabled rugby players, people that get disabled and injured in the sport. So it's really, really good. I know that we've got to go. Today's got a great show. Great show on the Unview.
Do you know what I love about Alan? He always says that with every single one of his shows.
Oh, but it's so good. It's so good. I've got Belinda Davids from the Whitney Houston show. It's been all around the world. And of course
she's amazing.
We've got her on the line.
She just performed in Cape Town last night, right?
Opening night. Mm-hmm. We've got Stephen Stead, who's the director of Puss in Boots. You must see how great this production is going
to
be.
That's coming to Gold Roof City.
Gregory coming in, 100%.
Fantastic.
Then I've got from Disney on Ice, two of the skating stars. They are a husband and wife team. They're South Africans, and they also go around the world with Disney on Ice. Huh. They're coming into studio. They're sitting outside at the moment.
We'll be interested to find out how they even started skating in South Africa.
So brilliant.
I just want to be half as happy as the two of you for the rest
of the
show.
And then,
the two of you are gushing over theatre and stuff. Like, wow. It's you and rugby.
We're well versed.
And then, do you know Toke Makinwa?
Yes, she has a book called Unbecoming. The launch is happening Saturday.
She's like a Nigerian icon and actress. She's coming into studio, which is really great. And then Ayanda Tabete is going to be joining us on the line. So a really full show.
She's an actress, on top billing, model, everything.
And a salon.
She's got a salon in Melrose.
That is a great full show.
That's a great show.
So that's what you've got to look forward to with Alan. Alan Ford on the Unview. Jonathan will be coming through as well.
And Nathan, Jonathan, same thing. Nathan Rowe is not going to be. Nathan's from John Nathan.
Stop! I did not know that.
I like to call him Jonathan.
And I also call him Jonathan Ross, but it's Nathan Rowe.
Oh my gosh, you're like literally. Do you know why his surname is Ross?
Okay, but you know why I can't? Why is he not Jonathan Ross?
Because of the talk show host.
Yes. So let's go Nathan Rowe. That's where it comes from.
Well, there's a Sia Sangweni who's a football player as well.
But anyway, it's definitely not you.
It's going to be lots of fun.
See you later.
I'm cutting you both off because we need to find out how you get the best body. Everyone always thinks, like, how do I get the best body? How do I get in shape and all that kind of stuff? Well, I've got the answer, and here it is. Courtesy of College Humor.
You've tried diet after diet and still can't lose those stubborn pounds. I'm here to share the secret that gave me the amazing body I have today. It's called genetics. Can you believe this was me just 12 years ago? Then I finished going through puberty, and thanks to genetics, well, my body naturally just fell into shape. It's amazing, but it's not just me. Listen, all these other people were completely satisfied with their genetics.
With genetics, I only need to go to the gym once a week, and that's just for a shower and a smoothie.
Genetics gave me a strangely large lung capacity and long limbs. You'd have to devote years of training just to match my natural ability.
I'm pretty normal looking, but genetics gave me a high metabolism, so I can eat anything I want without gaining a pound, and that's good enough for me.
With the right genetics, you can look great and feel great. It's safe, it's natural, and best of all, it's 100% free. But how does it work? My father is a very attractive man who, through being so good-looking, was able to seduce my mom, a very attractive woman, and they produced me, an even more attractive version of both of them. Still not convinced? Well, check out some of the other benefits of good genetics.
Genetics has given me a naturally symmetrical face that everybody just loves.
I'll never get Parkinson's disease.
I have an enormous penis. Seriously. It's like the neck of a violin.
So are you ready to give genetics a try? Too bad.
You cannot order new genetics because you cannot change your genetics. If you don't like the genetics you have, there's nothing you can do about it. Just find a way to make the best of what you were born with. That's all any of us can really do. Genetics do not determine your fate, and some things are still within your control. Work to change what you can, and don't worry about the stuff you can't today.
All right, yay, genetics. That wraps up for today, Thursday, 22nd of June. Catch us tomorrow, Friday. Fun feature. It was the last show without Gareth being in the studio, but he'll be joining us again over the Skype, and he'll be coming back from Amsterdam with lots of good stories, hopefully. Adam Ford with the Unview up next, and then it is the Bounce Show with Ben Karpinski. What a sports show this is going to be today. Derek Alberts is coming in, and we are talking rugby. Yes, I am Ben Karpinski.
Yes.
That is it. And you're wondering, you know, the whole show. That's me.
Gordon, yeah. You know, refer to yourself in third person. It's totally fine.
Well, see, where do you think I get it from? All right, catch you tomorrow. CliffCentral.com.